The Gift of the Magi. $1.87. That was all. And 60 cents of it was in pennies. Pennies which had been saved by bargaining with the butcher, the baker, and the vegetable man. 3 times Della counted it. $1.87. And the next day would be Christmas. There was clearly nothing to do but to sit down on the shabby old sofa and cry. So Della did it. Which makes one reflect that life is made up of tears and smiles, with tears winning. While the mistress of the house is sitting there, take a look at her home. A small flat that costs $8 a week, colorless and half-filled with shabby furniture. In the hall below was a letterbox, into which no letter would go, and an electric bell which refused to make any sound at all when it was rung. Beside it was a card with the name Mr. James Dillingham Young written on it. The Dillingham belonged to a former period of prosperity when its owner was being paid $30 a week. Now, when the income was reduced to $20, the letters of Dillingham looked blurred and out of place. But whenever Mr. James Dillingham Young came home and reached his flat above, he was called Jim and warmly embraced by Mrs. James Dillingham Young, already introduced to you as Della. Della finished her cry and washed her face. She stood by the window and looked miserably at a gray cat on a gray fence in a gray backyard. Tomorrow would be Christmas Day, and she only had $1.87 with which to buy Jim a present. She had been saving every penny she could for months with this result. $20 a week doesn't go far. Living expenses had been greater than she had calculated. They always are. Only $1.87 to buy a present for Jim. Her Jim. She had spent many a happy hour planning for something nice for him. Something rare and fine and perfect. Something almost worthy of the honor of being owned by Jim. There was a long, narrow mirror between the windows of the room. A very thin and very agile person, by observing his reflection in a series of rapid vertical strips, may get a fairly accurate idea of his looks in this mirror. Della, being slim, had mastered the art. Suddenly she turned from the window and stood in front of the mirror. Her eyes were shining brightly, but in those 20 seconds her face had lost its color. Rapidly she pulled down her hair and let it fall to its full length. Now there were 2 possessions of the James Dillingham Youngs, of which they both were extremely proud. One was Jim's gold pocket watch, which had been his father's and his grandfather's. The other was Della's hair. If the Queen of Sheba had lived in the flat opposite, Della would have let her hair hang out of the window some day, just to outshine the Queen's jewels. If King Solomon had been the caretaker, with all his treasures in the basement, Jim would have pulled out his watch every time he passed, just to see the king pull his beard in envy. Della's beautiful hair fell about her face in shining waves, like a cascade of brown water. It reached below her knee and was almost like a dress for her. She put it up again nervously and quickly, hesitated for a minute, and stood still. A tear fell onto the worn red carpet. She put on her old brown jacket. She put on her old brown hat. With the bright sparkle still in her eyes, she went out of the door and down to the street. She stopped where a sign read, "Madame Sofroni, Hair Goods of All Kinds." Della ran up to the first floor and collected herself, breathing hard. "Will you buy my hair?" she asked.
"I buy hair," said Madame. "Take off your hat and let me see what yours looks like."
Down fell the brown cascade.
$20, said Madame, lifting the hair with an experienced hand.
"All right, give it to me quick," said Della, closing her eyes at the sight of the shining scissors as they moved over her head. The next 2 hours passed happily. She searched the shops for Jim's present. She found it at last. It surely had been made for Jim and no one else. There was no other one like it in any of the shops. She had searched them all thoroughly. It was a simple, plain, platinum watch chain, worth its value because of what it was made of, not because of any special design, as all good things should be. It was worthy of the watch. As soon as she saw it, she knew that it must be Jim's. It was like him, simplicity and value. The description fitted them both. It cost her $21, and she hurried home with the 87 cents. With that chain on his watch, Jim could look at the time confidently in any company. Although the watch was beautiful, he sometimes looked at it in secret because of the old leather strap that he used instead of a chain. When Della reached home, her delight gave way to a little prudence and good sense. She got out her curling irons, lit the gas, and set to work to repair the damage caused by generosity added to love. This is always a huge task, dear friends. A huge task. 40 minutes later, her head was covered in tiny, close-lying curls, which made her look wonderfully like a naughty schoolboy. She looked at her reflection in the mirror, long, carefully, and critically.
"If Jim doesn't kill me," she said to herself, "before he takes a second look at me, he'll say I look like a chorus girl. But what could I do? Oh, what could I do with $1.87?
At 7 o'clock, the coffee was made and the frying pan was on the cooker, ready to cook the chops. Jim was never late. Della doubled the watch chain in her hand and sat on the corner of the table near the door he always entered. Then she heard his step on the stair down on the first floor. She turned white for just a moment. She had a habit of saying little silent prayers about the simplest everyday things, and now she whispered, "Please, God, make him think I'm still pretty." The door opened. Jim stepped in and closed it. He looked thin and very serious. Poor man, he was only 22, and to have the responsibility of a family. He needed a new overcoat, and he had no gloves. Jim stopped inside the door, motionless, his eyes fixed on Della. There was an expression in them that she could not read. It terrified her. It was not anger, nor surprise, nor disapproval, nor horror, nor any of the emotions that she had been prepared for. He simply stared at her fixedly, with that strange expression on his face. Della got off the table and went to him.
"Jim, darling," she cried, "don't look at me that way. I had my hair cut off and I sold it because I couldn't have lived through Christmas without giving you a present. It'll grow again. You won't mind, will you? I just had to do it. My hair grows terribly fast. Say Merry Christmas, Jim, and let's be happy. You don't know what a beautiful, nice gift I've got for you."
"You've cut off your hair?" asked Jim slowly, as if he had not understood that fact, even after thinking as hard as he could.
"Cut it off and sold it," said Della. "Don't you like me just as well anyhow? I'm me without my hair, am I not?"
Jim looked about the room curiously.
"You say your hair is gone?"
he said with a look which was almost of idiocy.
"You needn't look for it," said Della. "It's sold, I tell you. Sold and gone, too. It's Christmas Eve, Jim. Be good to me. It went for you. Maybe the hairs of my head were numbered," she went on with a sudden serious sweetness, "but nobody could ever count my love for you. Shall I put the chops on, Jim?"
Jim seemed to wake quickly from his trance. He embraced his Della. He took a package from his overcoat pocket and threw it on the table. "Don't make any mistake about me, Del," he said. "I don't think there's any haircut or shampoo that could make me love my wife any less. But if you open that package, you may see why you gave me a bit of a shock at first." White fingers tore open the string and the paper, and then an ecstatic scream of joy. Then, alas, a quick feminine change to hysterical tears, which needed all Jim's powers to comfort. For there lay the combs. The set of combs, side and back, that Della had admired for so long in a Broadway window. Beautiful combs, made of pure tortoise shell and decorated with jewels, the perfect color to wear in the beautiful, vanished hair. They were expensive combs, she knew, and her heart had simply wanted them without ever hoping to own them. And now they were hers. But the hair that should have worn the desired combs had gone. She held them to her, and at last she was able to look up with wet eyes and a smile and say, "My hair grows so fast, Jim." Della jumped up like a startled little cat and cried, "Oh, oh!" Jim had not yet seen his beautiful present. She held it out to him eagerly in her open hand. The dull, precious metal seemed to shine with a reflection of her bright spirit. "Isn't it a beauty, Jim? I hunted all over town to find it. You'll have to look at the time 100 times a day now. Give me your watch. I want to see how the chain looks on it." Instead of obeying, Jim fell down on the couch, put his hands under the back of his head, and smiled. "Del," he said, "let's put our Christmas presents away and keep them for a while. They're too nice to use just at present. I sold the watch to get the money to buy your combs. Now, why don't you put the chops on to cook?" The Magi, as you know, were the three wise men, wonderfully wise men, who brought gifts to the baby Jesus in the manger. They invented the art of giving Christmas presents. Being wise, their gifts were no doubt wise ones. And here I have told you the story of two children in a flat who most unwisely sacrificed for each other the greatest treasures they had. But it should be said that of everyone who gives gifts, people like these are the wisest. They are the Magi.